Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Cast to the Past, the time-traveling podcast where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. My name's Josh.
Welcome to the podcast of values, and I'm Tom.
No gods, no kings, only men. Today on our podcast.
Getting all solemn on me, Josh.
I know. Yes, today, Tom, we are going to be talking about one of your favorite games of all time.
I mean, it's up there.
I know, it's one of,
one
right?
One of, right, yeah. Yeah, no, this is a very seminal game for me, and a very seminal game period in gaming history. Mm-hmm. You know, this is huge. Mm-hmm. What is it, Josh?
Today, we are talking about the 2007 hit first-person shooter, BioShock.
BioShock.
So let's start first off, 2007, one hell of a year for gaming.
Oh my god, so many things. BioShock. Mario Galaxy, of course, the game of the year. What else from that year?
Halo 3.
A game that came out in 2007, yeah.
Modern Warfare.
Was that? Oh, that was 07. Wow.
Mass
okay.
Effect.
All right, yeah.
It's one hell of a year in gaming.
Not just a hell of a year in gaming, a hell of a year in our lives, Josh. We graduated high school in 2007. Oh,
God, yeah.
We were standing at the edge of tomorrow, and it was all up to us how far we would go.
Just a quick thing here. Best-selling games of 2007, right?
Yes.
Wii Sports, Diamond and Pearl, Halo 3, Modern Warfare, Super Mario Galaxy, New Super Mario Brothers, Mario Party 8, Phantom Hourglass, Diddy Kong Racing on the DS. Like, one hell of a year. Guitar Hero 3.
One of our earliest episodes.
But before I talk anymore, Tom, you got to hit us with that nitty gritty.
Oh, sure. Well, I'll gladly just get this out of the way. It's just this little thing that we do, you know, a little bit of housekeeping. So, BioShock was released on August 21st, 2007 for PC and the Xbox 360. Big exclusive for them. The box art I have still has that big green, like, only on Xbox and Windows. But 1 year later, it would be ported to the PlayStation 3, and then eventually, the original edition would make its way to Mac, to iOS, and eventually the Switch. The game itself was remastered as part of BioShock the Collection for PS4, Xbox One, X One, Series One, and the Switch.
The Xbox 720?
Yes. It was developed by 2K Boston and 2K Australia. Now, 2K Boston was originally known as a company called Irrational Games. We'll talk about their little history. But for this project, they were under the branding of 2K Boston. Irrational Games has actually now been rebranded to a little company called Ghost Story Games. BioShock was published by 2K Games, surprise, and it was written and directed by a man named Kevin Levine.
Oh boy.
So Josh, longtime fans may know that we have a deleted episode on BioShock Infinite. Like, it came out at one point. It's not deleted for any, like, nefarious reasons, but we have talked about BioShock before, but not since, like, 2017. So, I believe that episode, we had a long conversation about Ken Levine. Did I call him Kevin earlier?
You did call him Kevin. I was going to correct you, but that's fine.
Josh, isn't it weird that gaming as an industry is, like, entering the 40, possibly 50-year range, and there's still such a limited amount of, like, name creators, you know, creators whose work and style are identities and brands unto themselves. The film industry, you've got tons of them. You got your Spielbergs, your Nolans. The music industry, I would run out of time naming, like, you know, icons. But in gaming, it seems to be the same kind of handful of people. What do you think about that? And where do you think Ken Levine falls in this?
You got Miyamoto, you got Kojima, you got I can't remember his name. Gears of War. Oh,
Andy.
My God.
Ed? No. I know who you're talking about. Cliffy B.
Cliffy B. That's it. You got Ed Boon.
But I don't even know his full name. That's an insult.
Cliff Blazinski.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there's so many notorious, you know, RPG makers. There's so many, you know, you got God of War.
That's Corey Barlog.
Sorry, I'm like blanking on all of them as we're saying it, because it's like one of those things, like I'm being put on the spot for it.
But that's the thing. We do a podcast on gaming, and we're struggling to talk about the titans of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we just suck, but...
yeah.
Ken Levine, I think, undoubtedly has a place as one of these titans whose name should instantly sell a title. I mean, he has a full body of work, but just everything that he did with the BioShock series arguably cannot be replicated again. You know? It's just incredible.
Yeah, I mean, he really only did two BioShock games, but of the three.
Mm-hmm. But without, you know, his creative direction and everything, we wouldn't have had the beloved classic BioShock 2.
You know, going back to his original work, though, you know, on Thief and System Shock 2, which was a huge seller on the PC, it still to this day is. It's constantly being talked about, you know, as one of those great first-person adventure games on PC. And I don't know, like he has a really good history behind him, and it's great to see that he kind of got to do his own thing with this. You know, not only was he the director, but he was also the writer on this game.
Absolutely. So, I mean, look, this game's been out for 14 years. It's one of the most acclaimed and cited and talked about games of all time. What are we going to say about it that probably hasn't already been said? This is the first time I went back to this in a while. So sticking with what we do best on here in the show, I want to talk about how well it's aged. So let me just get a little bit of interesting development stuff out of the way that maybe listeners might not know. I don't know if you'll know, but I didn't know some of these things until we started this episode. So Josh, you mentioned the System Shock games. Ken Levine, all he wanted to do in the year 2000 was System Shock 3. He was like, hey, let me shock some more systems. And EA said no. Because nope. System Shock 2 did not sell as well as they wanted.
Too many hard drives were destroyed.
All that electricity.
Yeah.
Bzz. That left him without a publisher. So he floated around a bit. And he and the Irrational Games team, they built up this system by the year 2002. And it was a gameplay system developed around three concepts. Protectors, harvesters, and drones carrying a valuable resource. And if you've played BioShock, that should sound familiar to you. Those would all become Big Daddies, Splicers, and the Little Sisters. So they didn't have those names yet. It was just that concept. And they took this around. They took it back to EA and said, hey, we've got something. Do you want to get in bed with us? And EA was like, LOL, get out, loser. And they also took it to Atari. And Atari was like, no, we're going to develop Alone in the Dark. And everyone knows that. Like... Do you ever think it's funny when you like look into a hit movie or hit show and it's always like, you know, they took it to this studio and the studio said, no, that sounds like a bad idea. And like, do you just wonder what happened to the guy who turned down, I don't know, the Lord of the Rings trilogy,
right,
or something?
Yeah. No, it's so weird because imagine if this was under EA's belt. Imagine if this was under Atari's belt at the time, right? I mean, I guess it fits in with the 2K family of games now. You know, BioShock right next to Borderlands. Imagine if BioShock had Borderlands first-person combat style, where the gunplay to the Borderlands games, so much more smooth, so silky. This reminds me, the way that this played and carried out, very similar to the Fallout franchise. I felt it being a little stiff at times. And that could just be from the era that came out. But like we talked about at the beginning of the show, Modern Warfare and Halo 3 came out this year. And those two games had much better gunplay, I think, than this game did. But I didn't really play this game for the gunplay. I play this game to enjoy the world of Rapture.
Sure, sure. And I also think there's a degree of like Modern Warfare and Halo 3 were arguably going for much more fast-paced, frantic, energetic combat, where this is supposed to be, you know, like slightly realistic but survival horror centered, claustrophobic. You know, the guns aren't supposed to make you feel like a badass. The guns are supposed to, like, there's all these steampunk
weapons.
It's meant
for survival. Yeah.
Yeah. The shotgun with the upgrade that makes it literally go tss, and little things of steam come out. And like, if I saw one of those in real life, I'd be like, am I gonna break this? But yes, but eventually they took this pitch to 2K And 2K said, yeah, we won't just, you know, publish this. We're going to buy you and roll you in. And so they bought Irrational Games, and that's how they became 2K Boston. But having the funding allowed them to go all out once they settled on the concept, because from the beginning, Ken Levine's big idea was, I wanted to write a story about challenging the function of systems in video games. That's all he knew he wanted to do. And I think everyone, this is like the Luke, I am your father to movies of gaming, the would you kindly, you know, mm-hmm. I think most, if not all gamers know about the twist. And if you don't, stop listening right now and go play Bioshock and come back, because we're going to talk about the twist. So what's the story of this game, Josh? Can you carry us up to the twist just in terms of the plot?
You are a man named Jack, I think, question mark. Yes,
you are.
And you are on a plane. Your plane crashes in the middle of the ocean. You find a lighthouse. In that lighthouse, you go down an elevator. That elevator takes you underwater. And it takes you to a city in the water named Rapture. The place has kind of gone to shit. Gone to hell. People are killing each other. People going crazy. Kind of all over the place. And it is, you know, when you get there, you are greeted on a comms link, walkie-talkie radio thing by a man named Atlas, who is asking you to do, you know, go to this area, collect this thing, go to this place, kill this person, blah, 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 blah. And he's doing it very politely, can I add? Like, he's like, hey, would you kindly do this? Would you kindly do this? And I'm like, yeah, you know what? I'll do it.
I mean, yeah, you asked. It's very nice of him. You know?
Yeah.
Tell me about the kind of overarching founder of the city, Josh?
Oh, Andrew Ryan. Andrew Ryan is the man, the myth, the legend. He has created Rapture, a perfect underwater utopia. And yes, it is not only beautiful, but it is also very unsettling. And he is, you know, he's a businessman. He's like the Walt Disney of underwater, right? Imagine if Walt Disney and Shamu knew each other.
So you're saying that much like Walt Disney, he funded and built a magical kingdom where underneath it was actually all founded on bad faith and unethical practices that, led to some societal rot.
I'm not going to say he didn't. But all leading up to you finally meeting Andrew Ryan, and Atlas kindly ask you, would you kill Andrew Ryan? And Tom, what happens? Would you kindly tell me what happens?
Oh yeah, I mean, I didn't think about it till you asked me, but sure. So essentially, through exploring Rapture and listening to audio logs, which are, you know, hidden throughout but they give you a lot of great detail about the lore of this city, when you confront Andrew Ryan, he lays the truth on you. You are his son, born like 2 weeks before the start of the game. Essentially, you were a genetic experiment created by Atlas, who is not really Atlas. He's Frank Fontaine, a capitalist business owner in Rapture, who was always competing against Andrew Ryan. He stole you as an embryo from some hooker that Andrew Ryan knocked up, had you experimented on to age super fast, then he brainwashed you to always obey the command, would you kindly? He made you think that you were just a humble American farm boy, and he kicked you off to the surface world. And he was like, come back in like a couple weeks. I think it's maybe 2 years, but it's basically, you know, go back up. You're my secret assassin. You're going to come back down. You have Andrew Ryan's DNA in you, so you can walk through any door you want, and you're going to kill Andrew Ryan for me, and then I can own this whole city. The trigger word, your activation word, is the phrase, would you kindly? And I remember the first time I realized all this, I was just floored. Because what it essentially is, you are, when you start this game, you're just a silent player character, like hundreds of video games before, you know, all the NPCs interact with you, but you know, the character is kind of meant to be an extension of you. You know, it's not supposed to be Jack, it's supposed to be Josh, it's supposed to be Tom. And when you get to this twist, Andrew Ryan is basically like, you are a puppet. You killed and looted and plundered the remnants of this city at the will of a man you've never met, but you talk to over a radio, and now you've come here to kill me. You are pathetic. And Andrew Ryan's not a great guy. He's not a great guy. Like, the principles he built this city on. Josh, are you familiar with a concept called objectivism?
Not fully. I know of it. Like, okay. The word.
Okay. So objectivism is this concept that the gifted or the inherently talented have no obligation to share the benefits of what they do with others. You know, if you invent a drug, you have no right to share it with anyone who's sick. It's just for you. And he got sick of the whole, you know, like, share things with people and be nice to other people. He wanted a society where the geniuses of the world can just do stuff for them. And wouldn't you know it, in a place where there's no ethical oversight and no one to question if things are actually good ideas, it's like everybody in Rapture was creating Jurassic Park all at once, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, yeah. Whether they were killing each other or killing for sport or fun or taking mm-hmm. drugs that let you spontaneously combust or whatever you wanted to do.
Right, yeah. Like, so Andrew Ryan, dick, he has you kill him, but it's not, like, satisfying. He taunts you the entire time you're beating him to death with a golf club because he's basically like, would you kindly? Like, he's like, I'm freely accepting my death because I'm not a puppet. And this was just one of those first moments where, like, a game just kind of, you know, woke me up. I felt like, holy crap. What about your first experience with this, Josh?
Yeah, it was one of those things, because, like, it was very different from what we experienced in gaming at the time. You know, it was a lot of run to point A to point B, do a mission or shoot this thing, blow it up, end of the game. This was a moment in gaming, I would say. You know, the other thing that happens in this year was a little bit later down the road, and that was in Modern Warfare with the nuke going off in it.
Now, as someone who has never played Modern Warfare, can you explain that to me? Because I've always heard about it. I've heard it's a very significant gaming moment, but tell me about that, please.
So you play as a Marine or one of the military guys, and you're on a helicopter, and the helicopter is getting ready to evacuate out of this city. And they launch a nuclear warhead at the city. And as the helicopter is going away, you see it hit, and then you see it start, like, kind of rumbling, and the ground rumbling and everything going crazy. Your helicopter gets taken down. And the next scene, the next part of it, is you waking up as your character who's crawling, like, out of the salvage of the helicopter as your health is starting to deplete and you just die. But it's a very, you know, monumental thing in the game, because it was like, whoa, like, I'm playing a war game and my character who I've been playing as dies a quarter of the way through the game. Like, that's unheard of.
And it's not like badass or anything. It's very...
No, it's a very realistic thing, right? And with this, it was, I'm going to, you know, play this, do these missions, do this thing, explore this world. It's a horror game and stuff. And then it, like, you take a step back and you're like, wait a second, am I the bad guy? But I'm not the bad guy, but I'm being mind controlled. Like, it was so, like, what?
Right. No, absolutely. Similar thing. And I know lots of gamers experienced it, because this is what they still talk about. It's the fact that BioShock, you know, challenges you in that way. And you talk about that era, as you just did. I think the only other thing around this time that did anything like that was the end of Metal Gear Solid 2, where you find out that the whole game has just been a simulation to prove that, you know, we can make anybody do the same thing that happened in Shadow Moses because humans are that controllable. You know, and as we talked about on the episode we did, the final boss fight in the game, the main character is like, I'm not gonna fight you because that just proves you can control me. And they're just like, LOL, if you don't fight us, we'll kill your girlfriend's baby. So literally, you have to be our puppet. And he's right. Like, oh, crap. So yeah.
But so not only are we talking about, you know, the scene that happens with Andrew Ryan, but we also have the moral choices with the little sisters.
Absolutely.
Do you harvest them or do you save them?
First time you played this game, Josh, what did you do?
I did a mixture of both because I didn't really know how expensive some of the upgrades would be. So I was like, oh, you know what? They're kind of bad. And then I'm like,
oh, are they?
But now when I play through as an adult, a little bit older, you know, you figure we were like 17, 18 when this came out. Now you're like, it's heavy. Yeah. Yeah. Now you're like, well, no, you got to save them all.
The first time I played through this, I harvested them all. I ripped them up because
wiped them out, all of them.
But no, for real, you know, when I was in high school, I was this little edgy piece of shit who was like being the bad guy in games is great. And, you know, now I've seen so much evil in the real world that I'm like, I just want to save you all. You all are going to come live with me. If you,
as you kill their protector.
Yeah. Well, I guess we're just doing a horrible job at making this episode accessible to anyone who hasn't played the game.
Listen, this game has been out for 14 years.
Yeah, as I say, 14 years and change. Right.
If you haven't played it yet,
Little
I'm
Sisters.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, I guess I'm sorry too. But if you're still hanging around, Little Sisters are genetically engineered children who Andrew Ryan sends out to collect Adam, the source of the drug that creates superpowered humans in Rapture. And he has these genetically modified humans in giant weaponized diver suits called Big Daddies walking around and protecting them. So that's the Hunter Harvester drone system that we talked about when we talked about development. The Big Daddies are the protectors. The drones are the Little Sisters. And the Harvesters are either the enemy characters trying to kill the Little Sisters and take their power, or it's you trying to kill the Little Sisters and take their power. Now, there's two different endings, Josh, I'm sure as you know. And you get the good ending if you save them all. You get the bad ending if you kill more than one. That's the cutoff. I guess there's a Little Sister that the rest of them just didn't like.
Yeah. You know, this one's okay. This one's forgivable.
Where is Debbie? I guess it doesn't matter. We're all here. Speaking about these superpowers, Josh, what are your favorites? What are your favorite superpowers that you get from injecting yourself with atom-filled plasmids?
I think my favorite one was the insect swarm.
That's in my top three.
Just a giant swarm of hornets just attacking and damaging anything that goes near it. Not the bees!
They just burst out of your hands. It's like, yeah. You're Spider-Man, but you shoot bugs instead of webs.
Right. What about you?
My other two that I always had a lot of fun with were Security Bullseye, where you could make the robotic drones of this game attack people. So if I was getting swarmed by drones, I was just like, go get him! And they would go over there. And then finally, Winter Blast, because if you upgrade that enough, you just basically can freeze people into solid statues and then just go take a wrench to them and blow them apart. It got really, really fun.
Now, you know, we talk about this game having the stealth side of it. It has a little bit of a survival horror aspect to it. Some role-playing when it comes to upgrading your weapons, your plasmids, and stuff like that. But, you know, I was playing a game recently over on twitch.tv/cast of the past called Layers of Fear 2. And I mentioned in the middle of our stream, why is it that old-timey music is creepy?
I think it's not so much old-time music as it is the sound aesthetics of old music players. You know, it's the lack of clarity. It's the crackling, the white noise of a, you know, a rusty record player or something like that.
But even the voice, like the singing, you know what I mean? It has just that like eeriness to it. Mm-hmm. But if you listen to it normally, it sounds fine. But you put it in a enclosed, tight area and you hear it, there's some sort of just an eerie factor to it.
What's it going to be like for kids in the 2080s when you put, you know, super bass on an old rusty player and it's like...
So Tom, I need you to close your eyes right now. And listeners, audio listeners, if you're driving your car, close your eyes. Okay. And I want you to think that you are in a very tightly, you know, narrow corridor.
Okay.
All right. I'm lights there. Are dim. Nobody's home. You hear the creaking of the wood paneling.
DJ Khaled!
Keep going. I'm there. Keep
going. That's all you hear. That's all you hear in the distance. Like, where is he? Who is it?
BioShock 2090. You're walking through the ruins of a bunch of pop-up bars and escape rooms. You get your audio logs from...
Everyone has reams of paper from Dunder Mifflin.
Yep. Oh my gosh.
Oh. No, but I mean, the sound design to this game.
Yeah.
So creepy. Hearing the splicers running through the ceiling, hearing the claws scrape up against, you know, the metal, just... Oh man, it felt like you were always surrounded.
Yeah. And you never knew where something was coming from. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Just the whole game is just a feat of design. You got the Art Deco style of Rapture as a City, just this like World of Tomorrow showcase of a perfect city, but ripped apart because of the conflict driven by the city's politics. You know, you've got, as you said, the amazing sound design, the lighting design, you know, like it's dark and claustrophobic and you see flickers of light or you see like tunnels of light and you think like, oh, like this is maybe somewhere I'm safe. No, it puts a spotlight on you and then you are effed, you know.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah,
when you see like the lights of a Big Daddy coming out of a dark corridor, it's terrifying. We picked this for Spooky Game Month for a reason, because atmospherically
it's spooky.
Gives you spookies.
Where unlike BioShock Infinite, where it was so bright and so vivid, but there was an eeriness to it, it didn't sit the same way that this does. This feels more like a horror game, where that felt more like a grand action-adventure first-person shooter game. It felt more whimsical, you know what I mean? It felt more just like bigger set pieces. You know, it just felt like there was a lot more of a budget behind that game than there was on this
yes.
one.
Yeah, the horror of BioShock Infinite is in its themes and what its characters are exploring. But yes, the environment in no way evokes the same kind of emotions as this game does.
And I will say it, you know, Rapture is a top five best place in video games.
I wouldn't argue with that at all. Maybe also for me, I'd have to think about the other four off the top of my head. But yeah, that's fine. That can be on a Mount Rushmore of gaming areas for me. So here's a question I want to ask you.
Okay.
Did this game kill the concept of silent, uninvolved, unformed protagonists? Because after BioShock, I struggled to really think about it as an ongoing mechanic. You know, even if you had protagonists who didn't talk, they would talk through dialogue trees that you picked, or there'd be some kind of cheeky reason for them not talking, you know, or something like that. But like the concept of a first-person shooter character being a blank slate meant to represent you, did BioShock kill that through its twist? Like, do you have anything that can refute that? Because just the top of my head, like, Dishonored. Corvo is a named character with the backstory, and I'm pretty sure you talk through dialogue trees in that. What's another big, like, first-person title post-BioShock?
First-person, I don't really have an answer for that one. I have a third-person one, and that was Dead Space.
Right, Isaac Clarke, and he has a backstory and all that, right.
I don't really know.
Like, multiple Call of Duties that come after this, I feel like you always have a character with a name, with an objective. BioShock's own sequels. You know, BioShock 2, you're a Big Daddy, so you can't talk. But BioShock Infinite, you're Booker DeWitt, a man with a character and a backstory and everything. It's like they couldn't go back because of what this game did to the concept of you being a blank slate.
It's very interesting to think about, though.
So, like, Borderlands, of the four player characters you can pick, they have personalities, but they also are a bit of blank slates. Would you disagree? Like, what do you think?
Because not until Borderlands 2 do those characters have more personality, or they have emotes or anything like that that can, like, commentate on what's happening in the world.
Yeah. And since Borderlands is heavily multiplayer influenced, it's kind of like, they are supposed to be you. So that's a little different.
Yeah.
But yeah, most of the other big ones I can think of, you know, Skyrim, that's all driven by your choices. So yeah, I thought about it while researching. I was like, man, this game just kind of killed that kind of first person shooter. It never came back, or as far as I can tell. If you know, tell us in the comments.
But this game not only knocked it out of the park when it came to atmosphere, but it knocked it out of the park when it came to awards ceremony time. This received Game of the Years from the BAFTAs, Game Informer, X-Play back in the day, if you kids ever know what X-Play is. Don't worry, it's coming back soon.
I hope it comes back.
I know. Yeah, and so many others. Like, it was a big deal at the time, and it went up against Halo 3. It went up against Modern Warfare. Like, it went up against these games that, you know, all revolutionized what games turned into. I mean, it was a big deal that this, you know, up-and-coming game that no one really knew of, the first of its kind, came out and then just, boom, blew up.
And since then, you know, this became the game to imitate. A lot of first-person shooters afterwards, you know, the way it would kind of get pitched is like, it's like Bioshock, but if, you know, and that's happened over and over again.
But that's a good thing. I think that's more of a compliment. You know, people always say nowadays, oh, well, it's like Dark Souls. It's a Souls-like game, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's a compliment because the Dark Souls games are fantastic. There's a huge fan base out there, right? Hollow Knight is a Dark Souls-like game. Jedi Fallen Order is a Dark Souls-like game. So all great games can be similar to something else, but it does, you know, hurt originality sometimes where we're starting to lose a little bit of that in gaming. But that's fine though, right? Imitation is the highest form of flattery.
Right, right. Well, speaking of imitation and the fact that, as you said, this game was a big hit, 2K wanted more. They rushed out Bioshock 2, which, as you mentioned, Ken Levine did not work on, but he did work on Bioshock Infinite. That game was released to a ton of critical acclaim as well. Not Bioshock 2, though. But then, like, nothing from Ken. Irrational Games, they published Bioshock Infinite in 2013. 2014, they downsize and rebrand into Ghost Story Games. I read in some interviews that Ken basically was like, Bioshock kind of got so big that it stressed me out. I want to go back to something smaller, which is some of the core team members. But they haven't announced or done anything since 2014. Now, Ghost Story Games is owned by 2K. They're incorporated under them. And I presume 2K is not going to want to lose Ken at any point. It's just kind of like, hey, whenever you're ready. But silence. Silence at this point.
Do you think Bioshock still holds up now?
I really do, just because I still would get creeped out during this playthrough in Rapture. Like, Rapture is just so effortlessly fun to explore. Combat works, you know? Like, you get pinned down, it's intense. And then when you get out of it, you know, it's like a relief, but it's like, but I gotta go back to exploring the spooky world, you know? Mm-hmm. And even when you know what the different endings are, like, you got a couple different ways to play the game. I can't, like, replay it all the time, but spaced out, I think it holds up. I haven't played the remasters. I played my 360 version for this episode. You did it? Okay, so have you ever tried the remasters?
I think I tried it when I got it on the Xbox One when it first came out. I got to a certain point, and then I had a corrupted save, and I was like, I ain't going through this again.
I mean, look, the Fort Frolic level alone for Sander Cohen, that's totally something that holds up and is worth replaying this game for. But what about you? Do you think it holds up in 2021?
In a storytelling aspect, yes. I think the world of Rapture is amazing. I think just being in that world is awesome. I think going and finding all of the audio tapes, the audio logs it's so interesting to see the downfall of this world. And that's great. It is surrounded by not so great first person shooting mechanics, and where it can be stiff and it can be just not greatly aged, which it might be fixed in the remasters. I don't know.
Well, can you specify what about them is not great for you?
I just don't like how, like I said, they feel too much like a Bethesda first person shooter, where it's very stiff. Where it's just very clunky, kind of feels heavy at times when you're moving it. Yes, you adjust the sensitivity, but that doesn't really make it better sometimes. It really is how the game was created. And it's really hard to describe that. Like I said, when you think and play games like Halo 3 or Modern Warfare, and then you play this and you realize that there's just a different feeling behind how it controls. But it's not terrible enough to not play this. Like, okay. It's not like, oh, well, the gunplay sucks so much that just watch the videos on YouTube. No, that's not what I'm saying. I would definitely, in our skip, play, complete, or master, I would put this on the complete scale, going with the save all the sisters.
Yeah, absolutely. Same thing for me. You need to finish this game. You need to experience this story from start to finish. And, you know, don't be a dick. Save the little sisters. They didn't do anything wrong.
Right. They were just wrong place, wrong time.
But if you wanna rip them up, hey, you'll see in the ending what you cause, what you do.
Yes.
But yeah, this is a must, you know, like in terms of gaming history, you gotta 100%. Play the first. You gotta play the first Mario game.
And you gotta play BioShock.
Well, I was trying to like think of a couple other things to say without just going through Nintendo titles, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. No, I mean, in the history of games that you should play before you die, this definitely should be on that list.
Absolutely.
This is a very monumental moment in gaming in the 2000s.
When people say video games should be taken seriously, they frequently will point to this and say, like, this is gaming as a deep and highly playable piece of interactive art. And it is. It is. Mm-hmm. So we're not the first to say it. We won't be the last to say it. But play this freaking game if you haven't.
Yeah. Yeah. Highly recommended. But until next time, this has been Josh.
And I'm Tom.
And we will see you in the future. While we boot up the Triflex capacitor, please take some time to subscribe to the show and leave us a review wherever you listen. The show is nothing without you, and any support helps.
If you want to connect with us and discuss the past, present, and future of gaming, please follow us on Twitter and Facebook.
We also have a Twitch channel where we play games for the show and for fun, so come chat with us anytime.
Thanks again for listening.
And we'll see you in the future.